All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type helicopter pilot, United States Army, 1969. Welcome to today's program. We're going to be going back in time again, back to June 23rd, 2007, when my partner Gary Lilly and I had the opportunity to interview a gentleman named Gary Toyne. And Gary talked about his book, The Quiet Hero. And it's a great story. And then we talk a little bit about where have our heroes all gone? Where the, you know, they've kind of disappeared. We don't hear that much about them anymore. And I think you'll find this interview really enlightening. It's kind of timely, too, when you think about it, because we really don't hear that much about military heroes any longer. And we don't even really know how to define military heroes or heroes in general. So I want you to sit back and really enjoy this interview. It's great hearing Gary's voice again. For those of you that follow Veterans Radio, Gary was one of our founders, and unfortunately we lost him. But before we get into the program, I want to thank our sponsors, because we can't do Veterans Radio without their support and without your help even. So I want to thank our loyal sponsors. Let's see, that'd be Legal Help for Veterans, specializing in veterans' disability claims. Give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800, or you can go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for the certification of a veteran-owned business. For more information, go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. We also want to thank our local veterans organizations for their longtime support, and they include the Irwin Prescott American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And as I mentioned, you, we can always use your support. So you can just go to veteransradio.org, click on the donate button, and we would appreciate every nickel, dime, and dollar that you could spare. This is our 20th year, for those of you that are just listening in for the first time. And all you want to do, if you want to find about any of our programs, just go back to our website, veteransradio.org, and you can just click on our archives, and you're going to see 20 years worth of programming. I think you'll really enjoy some of the stories we have. It's been kind of a really interesting adventure for me to go back and look at the topics that we have covered over the last 20 years. Really pretty interesting. So anyway, we won't waste any more time. Let's get right into this interview with Gary Lilly and Gary Toyne. Here we go. Anyway, today's program first aired on June 23rd of 2007, and it's really a two-parter. First, we will be talking with author Gary Toyne, as I mentioned, about his book, The Quiet Hero. And it's a great untold story of George Whalen at the Battle of Iwo Jima. Then Gary will be talking to Gary Lilly, that is, will be talking with Gary Toyne in the second half of our program on the topic of where have our heroes gone? You know, kind of an interesting question, don't you think? Well, think about it. Who are today's heroes? What is a hero, or how do you define heroism? I don't know. So maybe you could help us out with that. Anyway, so let's get to the first part of Gary's interview with author Gary Toyne from June 23rd, 2007.
Good morning, America. I'm your host, Gary Lilly, here with you on Veterans Radio, and my co-host, Dale Thronberry.
Good morning. Good morning.
Helicopter pilot, and over there on the board, Ken Rogge. Ken Rogge waves hello.
I'm sorry, I hit the wrong button.
Today's show is going to be a really good one, Dale. Really an untold story of hero on Iwo Jima, Medal of Honor recipient. Even his wife didn't know about it for years after they were married. Just never spoke of it. The Quiet Hero.
I think it's a really fascinating story, and you know, what we're going to be talking about later on in the program is what makes a hero. You know, what has happened to the American hero that we all grew up with many, many years ago, and you know, how are we going to get this generation to understand the importance?
Our heroes alive and well in America. They're alive.
I know that, but they're not getting a lot of good press right now.
No, and we're going to find out from our guest Gary W. Toyne more about that subject. And with us is Gary W. Toyne, who is the author of The Quiet Hero, The Untold Medal of Honor Story of George E. Whalen. George E. Whalen was a Navy corpsman / pharmacist mate in the Battle of Iwo Jima, awarded the Medal of Honor, 2 Navy Crosses. Mr. Toyne, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I see that you are a professor of media, radio and media. I guess we're going to get our final grade after this interview.
Yeah, the tests are easy, though.
Oh, good. We'll let you carry it. tell us about this corpsman, George Whalen. What did
he
do?
Well, he's an amazing guy. Obviously, I have a bit of a propensity towards him and a little bias, admittedly. But I make the claim, and I'm always wanting to underscore this with the fact that I respect all Medal of Honor recipients, especially because they are true American heroes. And we could get into defining the word hero, but I think if there ever was a hero, it's a Medal of Honor recipient. But George is an interesting person simply because he can represent so many veterans. In particular, I think if you ask any Medal of Honor recipient, they'll say, you know, I'm not a hero. That's universal. They'll all say that. But they'll say, you know, this medal I wear around my neck is really as a proxy for every other veteran. Well, George is unique in that when he first joined military service as a civilian, he was actually working as in the capacity of an enlisted man, working as a crew chief at Hill Air Force Base in Ogden, Utah. Actually supervising 5 other people and just fixing planes, and they were actually preparing them to send off to Russia for the Second World War in Russia, and getting the Russian troops geared up. Worked on planes, and then all of a sudden he says, you know, I'm tired of this, and he went and wanted to join the military and join the Air Force. The Air Corps at the time, they wouldn't let him. They says, we're all filled up, but if you want to work on planes, go join the Navy. They've got planes. He says, okay. Went and volunteered for the draft, became a corpsman. Wasn't too happy about that, but didn't want to empty bedpans, and so he ended up volunteering for combat duty with the Marine Corps. And after Iwo Jima and the Medal of Honor and so forth, he came back and actually just kind of hid a little bit, but he wanted to find a way to hide from all the acclaim, so he joined the Army and served a distinguished career with the Army. So he actually has served all 4 branches of the military, and after he retired, he actually spent 14 years with the Veterans Administration.
He's still alive, isn't he?
Alive and kicking, yeah.
Yeah, you did the interviews yourself. Amazing gentleman. I mean, from the standpoint of the humbleness, and I assume he's a quiet person.
Very much so. You know, I had chosen actually another title for the book, but the family said, you know, if you really want a real title for my dad, let's say The Quiet Hero, because he is. He just has, what's amazing, I'll give you a little background on the story. He received the Medal of Honor. We can talk about a little bit how he received it, but what's amazing is that he came home from shaking hands with President Truman. And after he was in a rehab hospital for several months and finally came home, you know, everybody wanted him for parades and things like that. He says, enough of this. He threw the medal in a closet, didn't even know where it was. He actually just kind of threw it in there, and he just hid. He just kind of went, anonymous.
Sure. There, he was having a lot of nightmares, I understand, reading in the book, and one can understand why. And let's talk about that, the things that he did that brought on those nightmares. Tell us about the landing on Iwo Jima.
Well, he was born and raised in Utah, and you can imagine a lot of Mormons out there, and he was not one of them and never was really raised a religious person and didn't have that belief. They were about a day out of landing on Iwo Jima, and he says that was the first time he ever prayed. And he says, God, if you're up there, I need help, because I don't know if I can do my job. That was his biggest fear. is that he wouldn't be able to do his job. He was
common fear of combat people.
Yeah, wasn't afraid of dying. And I sincerely, I've talked with him many times, and actually his comrades many times. Dying was not the biggest fear. The biggest fear was letting down your buddy and doing something stupid where you didn't do enough so that somebody gets hurt or killed. And so he said a little prayer, and he says, after that, I was really pretty much calm. And then he was part of the 5th Marine Division, 226th, and he was part of the, I think they landed about 10 a.m., 10:30, part of the, I think, the 3rd or 4th wave.
The battle was already raging, and based on the radio reports coming back, everyone thought that we were just cleaning clack up there.
Yep. And the first wave was pretty much quiet. They were wondering, where is everybody? I think if you've seen the movie Flags of Our Fathers, you kind of get that sense that everything was kind of on hold. General Tadamichi Kurabayashi was a brilliant man, probably one of the most brilliant tacticians, I think, of the war, and just simply waited for many of them to get on land, and so they really had no retreat, and then all hell broke loose. And that's when George arrived, basically when all hell was breaking loose. We're more or less pinned down on the beach, and were it not for some brave NCOs and some others, forced them up on land and into a better position where they could protect themselves and just moved ahead.
I've talked to people that have been awarded the Silver Star and the Army Cross, Navy Cross, whatever they are, the Distinguished Service Medal, the one between the Silver Star and the Medal of Honor. I really never talked to a Medal of Honor recipient about what he did. But everybody that I've ever talked to, there's been a couple of times when I've listened to the stories where my hair stood on end on my arms and the nape of my neck. But what these guys have always said is, you know, look at it, somebody just happened to see me do what I did. Everybody was doing the same thing. There are the stories of bravery are astounding out there. It's just that somebody has to get singled out, it seems like. And the people that saw him do it have to be alive.
You're absolutely right. You've done your research well, and that is so true. That I can't tell you how many Medal of Honor recipients that never were, simply because nobody was there to see it. And acts of bravery, similar in magnitude and in valor, but just didn't meet the criteria. George's unit actually was Fox Company, 2nd Battalion, 26th Marines. Actually had two Medal of Honor recipients. So of a group of 250 men, they had two Medal of Honor recipients, and a third that was that probably should have received it, but the paperwork was messed up for some reason, and probably others. But
which happened quite a bit. They also had four Navy Crosses and four Silver Stars and probably countless Bronze Stars.
Yeah,
and 100% Purple Hearts. Is that right?
Actually, yes, 100% Purple Hearts. They're they actually had over 100% casualty rate when you consider their replacements that were in there. It was an amazing, you know, amazingly, anybody could walk away from that. But I think out of their entire company of the original that landed on the island, only five walked off without injury, and one of them was their CO, Frank Caldwell.
We're talking to author Gary Toyne, who's also was a professor of radio and media. And we're going to be talking later about the heroes of today. Where are they? But right now we're talking about we're talking about Whalen, George Whalen, who received the Medal of Honor. Tell us about some of the things that he did that caused him to be awarded. The first day or two, they were receiving a lot of fire, but not really on the attack. Is that true, his company?
Pretty much they were held in reserve. Didn't mean, you know, that was kind of a joke among many of them. Reserve meant what? You know, they were still taking significant fire and many injuries, even if in reserve.
Well, the bigger rounds were hitting in the rear, while the machine guns and mortars were working over the front lines.
Exactly. But the other point to remember is that, you know, Iwo Jima was a mass of caves and tunnels and interconnecting, tunnels between various points. And once a unit had figured that they had secured an area, lo and behold, there would be, you know, a Japanese would crawl underneath the line and shoot from behind.
15 miles of tunnels, you wrote.
Exactly. And it was, you know, they're just, there's really, it was such a difficult challenge, and they were truly unprepared for it. As far as what George did, what really happened, it was kind of a series of events. On one occasion, he was seen, a fellow platoon had taken a direct hit with mortar fire, and so there's about 14 Marines, or there's actually 14 Marines that are lying out in this open field, a little bit of gunfire overhead, but mostly an open field. And George, one of the men in that platoon, was his best friend, Eddie Monjaris. And he knew that with the calls for corpsmen that weren't being answered, that obviously his best friend must be hurt. So he leaves his unit, he goes over and one by one grabs a wounded Marine, treats him, drags him into a shell hole. He does this again and again, and he runs out to another one who has an amputated leg, puts a tourniquet on it, gives him a shot of morphine, drags him back. In the span of about a half hour, 40 minutes, he does this 14 times. One of these men happens to be his best friend, Eddie Monjaris, who has a chest wound, and frankly, he looks at it. He had a choice to make, and this is kind of the character of the man. He had a choice to make. His best friend, does he try to save him? Does he spend more time trying to save him, or does he do what he has to do and get him back and treat others? And that's what he did. He did his best for his friend, treated him as best he could, got him back, got him evacuated, but went back out and got more and saved more men. That was just one act. Other acts include carrying men twice his size to safety, going out in front of the line of fire. Just amazing acts that
you interviewed some of the people from his company, and he didn't realize it, but they were watching him in awe and inspired by what he was doing out there in that field. About an acre size, an acre is 203 feet by 203 feet, I mean real estate. And so that small of an area, 14 Marines, and the entire time mortar rounds were coming down on it, sometimes hitting, so heavy, sometimes hitting two at a time. Is that correct?
That's right.
And he was out there on his own with those wounded Marines.
And actually, it's amazing he didn't get hit, and everyone knew that was watching him were certain that they were targeting him, but they couldn't get him for whatever reason.
His mind was only on the Marines, and that he was certainly aware of the incoming fire, but his mind was solely on those wounded Marines.
Completely elsewhere. In fact, he only realized it once he had dragged that last man back. He jumped into a shell hole, and then it dawned on him, what did I just do? What, you know, and he just put his hands over his face and just shook. He says he shook for about 5 minutes, just could not believe what he did, and in some respects kind of kicking himself for putting himself in that position.
Right.
But it was just an automatic thing. He did what he thought was right.
A lot of times you do something dumb and you think, what was I thinking? Well, acts like that you do without thinking. You do with training, and you do with what's inside your guts.
Isn't that what they say about training, right?
Right, right. I've heard it time and again from the combat vets when instincts and training take over, and they find themselves doing things they were trained to do, and kind of while they're fighting a battle, they're thinking in the back of their mind in amazement of what they're doing and not thinking about it.
Just happening.
That was not the only thing that he did. That he also was awarded two Navy crosses.
Two Navy crosses they converted the two Navy crosses into the Medal of Honor.
Okay, tell us about some of the other things that he did.
Well, the other thing that is, as I said, was pretty amazing is the fact that he was out, one by one, kind of treating people. He was injured on several occasions. On one occasion, he took a hand grenade to the face, and with the soft volcanic sand, most of the blast went beyond him, but he still caught a significant amount of shell fractures in his fragments in his eye, and his face had swollen up, and he bandaged himself, and he went down to get some more supplies, and his CO was more or less ordered him to go back to an aid station to be evacuated. He grabbed the supplies and just ran away.
He refused the order to go to the rear and get treated. He resupplied and went back up to the front. And at one point, he found himself near a pit, a tunnel, with a Japanese soldier jumping up and throwing a grenade every now and then. And he was, he had a .45, but he knew that wouldn't do the trick. Tell us what happened then.
Well, he was trying to get up to treat a wounded Marine, but he couldn't because of this the Japanese soldier was coming out of this little spider trap or tunnel and throwing a grenade and retreating back into the tunnel. And so he snuck around it. He's still trying to get to this Marine, and he can't. So he snuck around and actually looked down about 15 feet into this little hole, and he can see that him coming out. He says he was close enough to use his .45, but he didn't know if he'd hit it or not. So, and he didn't have any hand grenades, so he called down to another, said, throw me up some grenades, and they threw him up a grenade, and he takes the pin out, but it won't budge. It's been bent down for safety, and so he, in the middle of this battle with gunfire and everything, he takes his K-bar out, straightens the pin out, pulls the pin, and waits a few seconds, and then just drops it, and as soon as he drops it, the Japanese popped out and was eliminated, and then George was able to crawl back up and treat that wound. I mean, actually save that guy because of that incident.
He had to roll over on his back to do that with the machine gun bullets flying over his head. We're talking to Gary W. Toyne, author of The Quiet Hero, The Untold Medal of Honor Story of George Whalen. We've got about 50 seconds left before we go to a break. Gary, tell us what are your conclusion, your thoughts with George Whalen?
Well, I think everybody should just know the stories of our American heroes, whether it's George Whalen or, you know, any one of the 111 that are remaining. Actually, it's 110. These are the average age of these Medal of Honor recipients is 73, and we're going to be losing them soon. So I would suggest, get your hands on these stories, find out about them, because we won't have them for long.
You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're coming up to a break now. We'll talk about American heroes, and we'll be right back.
Okay, we're back here on Veterans Radio here at WAAM, Talk Radio 1600. That's Gary Lilly, and he was talking to the author of The Quiet Hero. And so if you want to get a copy of this book, which I think you might want to, you can go onto our website, click on the cover, and it'll take you right to Amazon, and you can get this book. When we come back after the news break at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking still with Gary Lilly and Gary Toyne, about where are American heroes today. And maybe we can figure out a way that we can get more recognition for our heroes. I'm not sure how much time have I got there. How much time have I got? I'm sorry. 2 minutes? Okay. All right. Well, all right. So let me talk about what we're doing here. You heard both Garys talking about Medal of Honor recipients. And so as you know, here on Veterans Radio, we're really excited about having a local Medal of Honor recipient in Charlie Kettles. And we're going to be talking with Chuck and another Medal of Honor recipient from Michigan in 2 weeks here on Veterans Radio Live. So I'm hoping to get a couple of other Medal of Honor recipients on the air to talk about their experiences and what it is like, and just let the American public know who these people are, not just all the World War II Medal of Honor recipients, and because as Gary pointed out, they are passing away at a rapid pace. In fact, I think there's only 71 Medal of Honors recipients still alive today. But we've got a project that we're working on, and we are going to be promoting Medal of Honor recipients all across the country. And so if you have a neighbor who happened to be one, let us know where they are. We're going to be trying to track them all down and do a little story about each one of them, the Medal of Honor recipients. As you know, here on Veterans Radio, we do a little Medal of Honor segment every week that we can. And it's just a kind of a rereading of their citation. And it, you know, as you read those, you just cannot believe that these people actually were able to put their own fears and everything aside and be able to save their fellow human beings. After the news, as I said, we're going to be coming back with a Medal of Honor segment, and then I'll reintroduce the second half of our program for today. And that's what we're going to be talking about. What is it that makes a hero, and how do we get to that point? So we're going to be taking a break in a moment, because I can see that the music is going to be coming up here shortly. And you're listening to Veterans Radio, so listen to the news, come on back, and the interview will continue. Thanks very much. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Okay, we're back here on Veterans Radio, and we're going to be talking, continuing our conversation with self-proclaimed hero expert and author Gary Toyne. As you, if you were listening to the part one of our program, he's the author of a book entitled The Quiet Hero, which is about the Medal of Honor story of George Wallen at Iwo Jima. And it's a fascinating story, so I encourage you to grab that book if you can. But we're going to come back and talking with Gary Toyne, along with Gary Lilly and myself, and we're going to be looking at some questions to ponder, and maybe you might want to think about these as well. Is, you know, does the media reject America's war heroes? Do we hear as much about them as we should, or what we did at one point? Why don't our school children know enough about America's war heroes? And why aren't we hearing more about the heroes in Iraq and Afghanistan? Now, this program was recorded in 2007, and I think that some of that has changed since then. But we're going to go back and find out with the interview exactly what was going on. So I'm going to turn the interview back over to Gary Lilly and Gary Toyne.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. We're speaking to Gary W. Toyne, who is the author of The Quiet Hero, The Untold Medal of Honor Story of George E. Wallen. I guess I was pronouncing it incorrectly in the first half. Gary, where have all the heroes gone in America? We don't.
Well, that's a good
them.
Question. You know, part of the research that I'm doing on another book is about heroism, and I happened to set up my Google alerts so that I could kind of track what was happening with heroism in this country. And I'm amazed. There's, I think, an act of heroism, at least one or two, happening every day, and this is real person putting themselves at risk to save someone else. That's an amazing thing to me. I never really realized it. I think part of the problem comes in the use of the word. I think we have a video game called Guitar Hero, which I don't know if a Guitar Hero and George Wallen are much on the same plane.
Not
but
if
I think
they,
it gives you some idea
it.
About the overuse of the word.
Right. I was going to say, not unless they used it to attack a terrorist.
Yeah.
You're right. It's the dumbing down or the... it's not overuse. It's beyond that on the word hero. What about Medal of Honor recipients in Iraq, Afghanistan? Have we had any?
We have, you know, and it's interesting. It's a troubling thing, and I think you touched on it a little bit about the inability or... If it's unwillingness, I'm not willing to charge them that of unwillingness, but quite yet. But it's getting pretty close. I don't understand why the Pentagon is so hesitant to award the Medal of Honor. We've got Jason Dunham, for example, who did earn the Medal of Honor, but frankly, that's about it. Another one. The name escapes me off the top of my head, but. And it just doesn't seem for an engagement where we've been involved for, as long as we have, where are Medal of Honor recipients? They're out there, they're doing heroic things, but there seems to be some political decision involved in this. And, you may know, have a little better feel for it than I do, but it just doesn't quite seem fair.
I was just told the other recipient's name was Smith. I don't know the background on him.
Mm-hmm.
Is the media doing enough to publicize or to, put out what our people are doing on the good side? We hear about every charge that's ever made about them. What about the good, the heroic things? Are we hearing enough
about that's an interesting, interesting story. You know, I'm often hesitant to make criticisms about media bias. But in this particular case, it was just such a glaring circumstance that I had to write him a letter. But there was a case in Jason Dunham's case, for example, where the New York Times did not mention that he received the Medal of Honor. He actually went to the White House. Does the New York Times have a White House correspondent? I believe they do. Do they have a Washington, D.C. staff? I believe they do. They did not say one word about Jason Dunham receiving the Medal of Honor. Follow that up about 2 months later and near the front page of the New York Times, is a story about a Cuban officer who was killed trying to protect an airline or a flight going to somewhere in Cuba, and the guy had hijacked the plane and wanted to go to the United States, and he was killed in the process. And there's this big write-up about this Cuban officer receiving their equivalent of the Medal of Honor. It was just a stunning picture to me about what is going on in this country and why our veterans are getting such short shrift from the media. They simply, I don't think it's a matter of not wanting to or not caring about it. I think they hate them. I think that's what it's risen to, is just a level of hatred for the military. As Bill Clinton said, you know, he loathed the military, but I just can't see any other reason as to why they would ignore something so monumental as the posthumous awarding of a Medal of Honor.
I've said many, many, many times that this nation honors everybody else's heroes except its own, or everybody else's warriors except its own. Do you think that it's deep-seated in our education industry that we have people that are teaching too much against the goodness of the United States?
You know, I have to temper some of my views because
you don't have to on this show.
I haven't been in the schools, and I don't know for sure. But I have four kids, and you know, where I live, they just simply didn't get it. They don't hear these stories. They don't hear the stories of the Jason Dunhams or the George Wallens or anything like that. There is just a systemic problem about admitting that their country is powerful. I think that's part of the problem, is there's some self-hatred of the U.S.
Something to
because
apologize
we're so
for.
Yeah. And so, you know, and also I think there's some people that just simply want to it's just politically correct to trash the United States. And so they trash the veterans that protect it, that give them the freedoms, that allow them to speak so freely as they do. It's rather ironic, but
I was visiting friends in Chicago. Oh, that's about 2 years ago, and one of the people, retired gentleman, University of Michigan graduate, retired attorney, brought up the point: we don't have heroes in Iraq and Afghanistan, not like in World War II. And I said, "You do. We do have them. We've got some unbelievably brave people, but you just don't read about them in the media." And he said, "Oh, I refuse to believe that." But you do agree with that.
I absolutely do. And I'll give you an example. George Wallen and I went to Washington last October, and part of the things that what George wanted to do was simply give copy of his books to returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, and made the arrangements, and they treated George wonderfully, as you can imagine. And we would walk into a room of an amputee, and one particular, on every occasion, these young men had lost limbs, mostly to an IED, but they see George Wallen with the Medal of Honor come in, and one particular man had forgotten that his legs were blown off and tried to stand up to salute George. These men here, and actually women, had put themselves in such grave danger, yet to a man, every person that we spoke to, they said, "I want to get back. I believe in the mission. The mission is going to be successful regardless of what you hear." I mean, we were walking in rooms at random. We weren't trying to, you know, fed anyone. But these young men, I think, you know, we talk about the greatest generation, and believe me, I have such great admiration for our World War II vets, but I'll tell you, these young men are no less heroic and no less dedicated to their mission than those of World War II. And I am just, we walked out of there. We were hoping to go in and inspire these young men and just say thank you. And we walked out of there so uplifted and so optimistic, thinking man, we've got some great young men out there. Our country's in great hands.
Gary, this is Dale Thronberry, and I just had a question for you. Do you think that that has to do with the lack of involvement by the majority of our population? I mean, during World War II, we had all the war bond drives, and they would bring out the Medal of Honor recipients and the Iwo Jima flag waivers and all these other things to raise the funds to do that, and pretty much everybody in the country was involved. With what's going on in Iraq right now, unfortunately, we've got less than 1% of the population that's doing all the fighting for us. And
I think you raise an excellent point. It's been said that a religion can't really demand or can't really achieve much unless it requires some sacrifice of its members or people. And in fact, that's really the case. You know, you really can't get people involved in your cause. You can't get people involved in this cause unless they're asked to do something or sacrifice for it. It's just too easy. We've just got it too good. I can't agree with you more, Dale. It just makes absolute perfect sense. When you talk about people in World War II having to give up sugar and butter and tires and shoes, my grandmother went without shoes for 5 years because she wasn't able to get them because of the rationing. You know, you can't help but be involved in the cause when you're having to make sacrifices. It's a sad thing.
Talking to Gary Toyne, author of The Quiet Hero, The Untold Medal of Honor Story of George Wallen. Gary, your vision quest seems to be to bring about the awareness of heroes. We've got a minute left. Tell us about some other heroes that you've run across, and then we'll come back to it after the break.
Well, my point is simply trying to get as many people involved. Like I said, the Jason Dunhams. There are so many instances where heroic acts have been dutifully and duly noted, but simply have lacked recognition. Part of what I'm working on is a book called American Heroism: Untold Stories of Heroism You've Never Heard, and that's part of my efforts here in trying to get people involved in trying to recognize heroism. It happens a lot, but frankly, the type of heroism we're talking about, military heroism, is really still quite rare.
When we come back from the break, we're going to ask our listeners to tell us stories that they have about heroism by email. And we're talking to Gary Toyne. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Paul Smith gave his life to protect his troops. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
On April 4th, 2003, a call went out for a place to put some Iraqi prisoners. Sergeant First Class Paul Smith volunteered to create a holding pen inside a walled courtyard. Soon, Iraqi soldiers, numbering perhaps 100, opened fire on Smith's position. Smith was accompanied by 16 men. Smith called for a Bradley, a tank-like vehicle with a rapid-fire cannon. It arrived and opened up on the Iraqis. The enemy could not advance so long as the Bradley was in position, but then, in a move that baffled and angered Smith's men, the Bradley left. Smith's men, some of whom were wounded, were suddenly vulnerable. Smith could have justifiably ordered his men to withdraw. Smith rejected that option, thinking that abandoning the courtyard would jeopardize about 100 GIs outside, including medics at an aid station. He manned a 50 caliber machine gun atop an abandoned armored personnel carrier and fought off the Iraqis, going through several boxes of ammunition. As the battle wound down, Smith was hit in the head. He died before he could be evacuated from the scene.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit veteranscrisisline.net. Veteranscrisisline.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
And we're back on Veterans with author Gary W. Toyne. Gary, I assume you're interested in learning more about heroes that have not come to the light. How could people contact you to say, hey, here's something you ought to write about or some person you ought to write about?
I appreciate that. Let me just clarify a point that I was saying before. I think the fact that we have military heroism happens all the time. The fact that it's recognized is rare. That was my point. You know, they can contact me at my publisher. The email address is info@AmericanLegacyMedia.com, or they can go to the website thequiethero.com and submit information there about their hero. I'm looking for people, an easy criteria. It's quite straightforward. Somebody who has put their life in danger for to save someone else's life. And after that point, and this is kind of the sticky part, has not really sought recognition or has tried to use their heroism for some personal gain. Often we find that happens, not often, but that's really what we're looking for, people that are more or less quiet heroes.
After 9/11, we heard a lot about the firemen going up into the towers and how many of them died, and the policemen over in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
those are the type of heroes. And what I want to do is I want to speak with them. So I'm not really looking for posthumous people that have passed away. I want to speak with them because I want to find out how they've dealt with it. I want to talk to them about what they went through and what they've gone through and what to kind of has come up since then. So that's really what I'm looking for. But if any of your listeners have got any military or non-military, it doesn't matter. I want to hear about it. There's quite a bit of it out there, but you know, the good stories are there's people that just simply in your community or somewhere that have just not been told, and I want to hear about it.
This is Dale again. My comment, I guess, would be is that with many of the returning Iraq Afghanistan veterans, is that it's almost too soon for them to open up. It seems like when we're in doing our program and talking to the World War II and up to the Vietnam veterans, it's taken them 30, 60 years before they're willing to tell their stories. And with the Iraqi people, sometimes maybe it's just a little bit too soon for them.
That's a real good point. But, you know, what I have found, though, is that people who have seen it in other people, they're willing to come forward, probably obviously much more less hesitant than the people that are actually involved in the heroism. But I'm hoping, I agree with you 100%, that, you know, there's a certain amount of time and healing that has to take place through time. I'm hoping, though, that some people will understand that, you know, we need to tell these stories. These stories need to be out there. People need to know the character of our military people.
We've always said that these are ordinary people who do extraordinary things, and that to me is what a hero is. Somebody who steps forward and doesn't even think about the consequences for themselves.
Because it's ingrained in their character.
It's a matter of character. You're mm-hmm. absolutely right.
Gary, you touched on something that I was going to bring up. I have found in trying to get Vietnam veterans to talk to school kids that you have to persuade them to do it. So if somebody out there knows of a hero, they ought to contact you and tell you about it so that you can make the contact yourself or join in with trying to get the person to talk about what they did?
Yes. And what I'm trying to do is just simply trying. A lot of these young men and women are frankly not ready to talk, like you said, but I want to know who they are. My project's not going to happen in 6 months. I want to know who they are. And frankly, this is a long-term project that over time will probably evolve. So let me know who they are now. It's important to get to know these people and get them on record so that we can track them. And frankly, as I said, it's a matter of character. We want to see how they deal with it, how they deal with not only the heroism, but obviously the memories that are haunting them. It's being a hero is so multifaceted. You know, I don't personally understand, but I kind of sympathize with George when you're dealing with having to deal with nightmares, seeing your best friend blown apart, seeing all of these horrific things, and then on top of that, being called a hero for doing something that you think is just your job.
And they get defensive about it. One of the things that I have seen, experienced, not for myself, but the people that have got to talk about it, is it's healing for them. It's therapeutic. And they come to realize afterwards that it is. Dale, we have a doctor in our Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, worked on over in Vietnam. One time was a 6.5-day stretch of operating on terribly wounded troops. And he talked about it at Pioneer High School here in Ann Arbor for the first time, and said it really bothered him afterwards, but he'll do it again because it was good.
Well again, yeah. If we're not telling our stories, somebody else is going to tell them for us, and they're going to mess them up. So we got to get them down someplace.
You raise an excellent point. George Wallen, for example, was interviewed by James Bradley. George has gone more or less 60 years not telling a story to anyone for much of the same reasons we've discussed. James Bradley comes out to interview George for his book, Flags of Our Fathers. And he tells him about his dad, who was, John Bradley, who died and didn't tell anyone, and, how John found it out in a trunk when he was going through his father's things after he died. It was that interview that was really the catalyst for George to say, you know what, I better tell my story, and I better tell him the way I know it's to be true so it doesn't get blown out of proportion. And, it's interesting how those types of interviews and those types of events are cathartic for many of these young men. They've never talked about it, or they've talked about it in such, bits and pieces. They've never really put it together. It is cathartic. It is therapeutic. It has great healing powers in being able to talk about it and to say, you know what, I survived and I'm okay.
Do you know the interesting thing I've observed about Vietnam veterans is anytime you ask them about it, it always starts off with, I was only. Those three words, I was only. And so one of the reasons I think that people don't talk about their heroism is because they think, I was only. I saw guys do things that were much more heroic than what I did.
Well, and I think there's obviously, in addition to that, some real character things going on here saying, I don't want to bring attention to myself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, if I say this, what is my buddy going to think when he did the same thing? I understand that, and I don't want to put anybody in a position to say, hey, look, I'm here to make you, to put you in a book and make you all famous and everything. That's not my point. I think there's a bigger picture here. I want people to come forward to say, look, here's the type of character of people that I served with, and you know what? There's a lot of it. There's a lot more of it that's being portrayed. And it just needs to be told. It needs our heritage needs to preserve these stories. It's important for us to be involved in leaving a legacy like this for our children and grandchildren.
As you said earlier, you don't need to tell your story. It will come out in the telling when you're telling about other people that you served with.
That's right.
The things that you, this is to honor others. It's not just, not to draw attention, it's not to brag. There's no bragging in here. These people don't brag. It's to honor the people that they served with. Recognize them. We're talking to author Gary W. Toyne on Veterans Radio. You're working on a large, long-term project, you said, Gary. It's your vision quest to find the heroes. What is the end product going to be?
Well, actually, there's several. It's kind of a multi-book process. I'm working with a gentleman by the name of Doug Sterner, Pueblo, Colorado, who's kind of the Medal of Honor expert. We're actually trying to compile a book of all the Medal of Honor recipient, DSC, Distinguished Service Cross, Distinguished Service Medal recipients, and Silver Star recipients, which is a huge process. But over the long haul, we're trying to create an encyclopedia of American military heroism. It's never before done before, but certainly it's a lot of work. So it's a long-term process, but we're in that process. A companion book is, you know, these unsung heroes or people that don't really didn't receive a lot of recognition, or maybe did, you know, whatever happens. But we're that's kind of that whole process. We're trying to document American military heroism, and also along with that, you know, regular civilian heroism as well. So it's a huge project. It's going to take many years to work on and complete, and that's why I need veterans to kind of step forward and say, hey, look, this is my buddy, this is what he did, or I know this guy who, or, you know, whatever.
I think that's really important. We have talked with Doug in the past on Veterans Radio, and we've been talking about this. We've also, we will put your information up on our website, of course, and we encourage people to contact you and also to participate in the Veterans History Project, which is being run through the Library of Congress, trying to record all of these stories. And you don't have to be a hero to record your story. It's really important that all of you out there get these opportunities and get these stories down, because you know, your great-grandkids are going to be fascinated to find out what great-grandpa or great-grandma did when they were in their 20s.
Absolutely. And I've got a web link that I'll send to you. I haven't got it handy because I'm in Washington and my office is in Utah. But I'll email you a link so that you can put it on your website where they can just click on it and then they could submit the story through just a little web form. So, which will, you know, they can do it anonymously or they can send me an email, whatever they want to do.
Okay, we're looking forward to that. We've been talking to Gary W. Toyne, author and historian, author of The Quiet Hero, The Untold Medal of Honor Story of George Whalen. We've also been talking about the American hero. Where are they? They're out there. We know that. They're just not being publicized. And Gary wants to hear the stories of the American hero.
And but they can still email me at info@AmericanLegacyMedia.com.
Gotcha.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being with us, Gary.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed today's program that was originally aired back in June of 2007. Really great to hear Gary Lilly's voice and a really interesting conversation with Gary Toyne. And I want to just update things for Gary Toyne. I think the email that we gave during the program is no longer operable. So if you want to find out more about Gary Toyne, go to his website. That's GaryToyne.com. He's still writing. He's still out there. He's still a great interview, and I'm hoping to have him on again next year to talk more about heroes. You know, when he was mentioning that he is working with Doug Stirner, who's you know, written hundreds and hundreds of books, trying to gather all the information that he can about, you know, Medal of Honor recipients, Silver Stars, everything along those lines. And so we're going to have Doug back on later on this year as well. At the end of each program recently, I've been playing, you know, different versions of God Bless America or America the Beautiful. And today we're going to be going out on a version from the Grand Ole Opry, and it's kind of a combination of both of those songs. I think both of these are very, very important to, you know, the American psyche. You know, with everything that's going on in the world today, I just want to remind our audience what a great country that we do live in. You know, and we will get past all of this turmoil and everything else that is going on once we seem to get our senses, you know, back in order again. But I just want to remind everybody what a great place this is to be. You know, we want to be that beacon on the hill, as you know, as Reagan said, and the rest of them. So I want to pay attention to this song. Pay attention to the words. They're really important. So until the next year, I guess it will be, until next year, this is Dale Thronberry from all of us here at Veterans Radio, wishing you a happy new year. And until then, you are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love, stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above, from the mountains to the prairies to the God bless America, my near the grave.